Play ball.
Hi, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, whatever it is, wherever you are. Thanks for subscribing, streaming, or downloading and listening to us on your computer or MP3 player. I'm Austin Titchener, one third of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, and you're listening to this week's Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast, number 136, Balls and Strikes. When we were in San Diego back in March, our very own Reed Martin was reunited with his old friends and fellow minor league baseball umpires, Terry Prescott and Tom Canego. They let me be a fly on the wall as they reminisced in a very loud restaurant and talked about this fascinating subculture. As they speak, just remember that Terry Prescott is the one with the distinguished Southern accent, and Tom Canego is the one who doesn't sound like Reed Martin. How long have you guys known each other, and when did you all meet?
Well, Terry and I were just figuring last night. We've known each other almost 30 years. We met at the Bill Kinnaman Umpire School in 1980.
And you are all graduates of the Bill Kinnaman Umpire School.
Yep, 100% tried and true.
Absolutely. We got all the way through there.
So talk about the Bill Kinnaman Umpire School. Is it a three-year program? Are there sexy co-eds? How does that all work?
There's non-sexy eds. What were there, 50 students? Oh, was it more?
150 students.
Okay.
Just 150 started, and I think actually about 112 finished because right. it was a grueling 6-week program. It was absolutely 8 in the morning until 10 at night with field exercises, and probably was as best a physical shape as I'd ever been in my life.
Wow. So it is a little bit like boot camp.
Yeah. And you slept in a dorm. We were at a Little League complex in St. Petersburg, Florida, and so it was like a big barracks with bunk beds lining the wall. So in a room, there'd be 75 people, and you'd have classroom sessions in the morning studying the rule book.
Okay.
And then from you do late morning, you get to the field, you take lunch break, and then all afternoon you'd be on the field giving situations. The instructors, a lot of whom were major league umpires, some were minor league umpires, coming out and acting out situations as players, as managers, yelling at you, trying to confuse you, trying to intimidate you.
Wow.
Seeing how you react.
Calling you names.
Yeah, yeah.
What the hell were you guys thinking? What motivated you to become minor league umpires?
Well, that's just something I'd always wanted to do since I was a kid.
Really?
You know, I just never had the opportunity to do it. Worked a lot of amateur games, Little League, right on up through high school and American Legion, and had the opportunity to go and took the time off of work and paid my $600 and went to umpire boot camp.
So how many years had you umpired before you went to the Bill Kinnaman School?
I'd been doing that about 15 years before I went to the school, actually.
Yeah, you were the old man there, weren't you?
Yeah. And I'm still the old man today. as you reminded me a couple times already today.
And where had you heard about the Bill Kinnaman School? Because Tom and I have known each other since we were kids.
It would have been in junior high school, so we knew each other probably 10 years before we went to the umpiring school.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I knew that you were a Sonoma guy, Tom.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you guys plan up as high school buddies going, hey, you know, it'd be cool if we go to umpire school?
Well, for me, I was an okay player, but I wasn't any great shakes, and I wanted to stay in the game. And Tom and I, we started to umpire, I think, at about the same time in Sonoma, doing Little League, and then worked up to high school and Babe Ruth. And there was a guy in town, Jim Greewey, who had gone to the school several years before us and spent a year or two in the minors. Or, no.
I don't think he spent any time in the minors, but he kind of served as a mentor to us. So while we were 15, 16 years old, he kind of made umpiring seem a little glamorous. And I think Reed and I both saw that our playing days were numbered. We thought we could get through high school. We didn't think we could get too much into college, but we knew maybe we could do something in umpiring. And we were both pretty good at it at that age.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, how does one notice whether you're good at umpiring or not? The more the fans hate you, the better you are? How does that work?
I don't know how you know you're good. I guess other people say, you know, they've watched you work Little League and say, hey, you should go up and work the teenagers. Or they see you working the young teenagers and say, well, you should get into this umpire association and start working some high school games.
Well, they keep asking to come back. That's the first clue.
Yeah. Yes, you haven't been killed. Although Terry has a story, but anyway.
Yeah, a couple of stories involving gunshots and tobacco juice on the church, you know.
Yeah.
Well, all right. Well, let's go there. What's that story? Why were there gunshots being fired at umpires? I know the reasons. How did you escape, I guess, is the question.
Well, I think obviously they disagreed with that third strike call in the ninth inning. But yeah, afterwards, just sitting out in the trailer after a game, just relaxing, kind of chilling back, and we heard two shots zip right through the motorhome.
Holy moly!
Missed everybody, of course. Never knew who fired the shots, but just came out of nowhere, went through the windows, and that was it.
And these were fans, not players.
They were fans, as far as we know. Although the pitcher had something had a bone to pick with me.
Right.
The story I heard, it was his ex-wife, but he likes to tell it. He likes to tell it differently.
So then you met at the Bill Kenneman Umpire School, but then you actually then went into minor league umpiring, right? I mean, you made it as a job, right?
Well, I spent a year in the Pioneer League, and then after that 1 year, I got into theater at Cal and got into the summer theater program there, and I said, applause, gunshots. Applause, gunshots. And obviously, I made the wrong choice. I'm with the Reduced Shakespeare Company all these years later.
You're 21 years old, so that's when we went to umpiring school. So, and I was right in the middle of college. So after that, I kept umpiring, but somehow I was motivated more to go back to college, where I was kind of, you asked earlier why I went to umpiring school. I was a little lost for a while. Okay. I just went through 2 years of post-high school, first 2 years of college, didn't know what I wanted to do with my life, and I was a little lost. And maybe Reed was at the same point. We both hooked up there.
Uh-huh.
So it was good.
But you weren't, Terry, you weren't lost. It was just something you loved to do.
That was just something I wanted to try to do. Unfortunately, I met up with these two guys, and I came out of the school. Did well enough, I think, to go on, but just had the opportunity to go to work for a major airline in the South at the time, and just decided I wanted to go do that. Nice company pitching. Of course, they're no longer around, and I'm no longer doing baseball, so I don't know who was the winner there.
Reed's flair for the dramatic started in umpiring, because when we first started umpiring, we would be doing 7 and 8 year olds, right? So it's the bottom of the bottom here, and he would be practicing his best called third strike loud as hell, ringing up some 7-year-old kid, causing the kid to cry. But his flair for drama started in umpiring.
That's how he handles latecomers at our show.
We heard we got to be there on time.
Now you're saying like making 7-year-olds cry is a bad thing. I'm not following the logic. But it's interesting. I mean, all of us umpired for a few more years, and then, I don't know, I kind of burnt out. I continued to umpire after my minor league year, some high school and college games, but I umpired intramurals as an undergraduate and as a grad student at UCSD, not only softball, but football, a little basketball. So it was a good job, but I just got burnt out. I mean, you just have to take so much crap all the time.
It seems like theater, there's a high burnout rate, and you have to really love it to stick with it.
Mine started, it was a bad incident in a game up north, Northern California, and a death happened in the stands. A fight broke out. It was a really, really heated game. A fight broke out in the stands. A lot of people had been drinking. And that was my first experience with the legal system, because 6 months later, I'm being interviewed by lawyers because the city had been sued. Was the game under control? Was there enough security? That was the theories. And that was probably the last game I called until my oldest kid turned 10 years old.
Okay.
And that was about a 20-year gap.
Well, yeah, say what you want about a bad audience or a bad show. Yeah. There have been relatively few deaths at Reduced Shakespeare Company performances.
Yes, and I'd just say most of the drinking was not the umpires.
This is Tim Young. I host the Deconstructing Comics podcast at deconstructingcomics.com, and you're listening to the Reduced Shakespeare Company podcast.
Talking amongst ourselves earlier, what makes for a good umpire? Is it getting all the calls right? And I don't think it is. I mean, you guys had an opinion about what you think it is.
I think it's acting like you got all the calls right and managing the game to the point where you're not over-umpiring. Over-umpiring would mean that you're the fans remember you more when the game is over with than they remember the players. If you can last an entire game and they don't even know you're there, you've done a wonderful job. And
I've heard that the same description of a butler.
Yes.
Anthony Hopkins did that in Remains of the Day. Yeah, if you walk into the room and the room gets emptier.
Yes. I think it's that, and managing the game as much as possible.
Right? And I think, primarily, I think coming out of the umpire schools actually was a wonderful experience. I think, first of all, it got me in touch with these two guys that I've maintained friendship with for 30 years. But also, I think just from, umpire is nothing but it's a lot of processes and procedures, rules. And, to this day, I can use that for motivation. I use it for conflict resolution, in my professional career in the IT field.
Right.
Because it all becomes a matter of how do you manage the situation that's in front of you.
Right.
And somebody's right, somebody's wrong. You're always stuck in the middle trying to, decipher who that is and how's best to manage the situation. So it's been a lifelong experience for me.
Yeah, and different umpires had different ways. I mean, they call them situations, but how do you handle it? Some guys never want to admit they're wrong. For some people, that works. For other people, if the situation is right, you go, well, maybe I missed it, but that's what I saw. And there's always funny stories about, umpires who handle situations. The manager came out to argue about an imaginary line where the thing was out of bounds. Mm-hmm. And, well, it was over that imaginary line. And the umpire came up with some funny thing. Well, if it's an imaginary line, then let's have an imaginary argument. And he just cracked the guy up, and he said, okay, fair enough. Yeah.
But talking about arguments, I got to ask you about two plays.
Yeah.
See if you remember them. One was you're the plate. There's a line drive hard down the left field line. I think the ball was foul, and everyone in the stadium saw it foul except you. And you pointed fair, or maybe it was the other way around. But and the place came unglued, and you had to toss a couple people out. Do you remember that? It was in Northern California. I just don't remember where we were at.
Boy, I made so many bad calls over the years. I can't recall them all. But
it's weird how those games stick out in my mind. But it was one of those where you were blocked by the batter or the catcher, couldn't see it. You had no base help, and it was just a cluster. And then the other one that I remember was cluster. You know what I mean by that. Last inning championship game. I'm on the bases. You got the plate. Base is loaded, and it's a swinging strike three. Ball's in the dirt. Catcher scoops it up and runs to the pitcher. They jump into each other's arms, and they start celebrating, thinking that they've won the championship. But since the ball was in the dirt, you hold up your hand, and you're allowing the batter to run to first base.
Right. Just to sort of describe what Tom is doing, on a third strike where the catcher hasn't caught it, you hold up your right hand, but you don't close your fist. So it's an open hand saying it's a strike, but I'm not calling you out because he didn't catch it on the fly. He hasn't tagged you. They're going to have to either tag the batter or throw it first. So you're indicating to people, no, it's a strike, but you have to finish the play.
So these guys, the defensive team is celebrating the championship. Reed is looking at me, and I'm pointing to the ground. The ball hit the ground. The offensive team is running around the bases. All four runs score, and now we've got a cluster on our hands. It was the only time that I could ever remember being in such a hurry to leave the field. I never took our equipment off. You didn't take your equipment off. We jumped in our car. We got the hell out of there as quick as we can because it was a bad scene. Do you remember that game as well?
No.
You don't.
Probably good that you don't because that is probably my biggest nightmare.
We recall the bad calls because those are the funny stories. But on the other hand, all three of us have been asked to work a lot of championship games, playoffs in the professional minor leagues, But those aren't the funny stories.
So, and would you guys recommend that your children go into minor league umpiring or baseball umpiring?
Baseball umpiring, I think, as a teenager is a good job. Minor leagues is a very tough road to home. I'm glad I didn't stay with it because it's just hard to have a normal life. You're never home. It's much like the theater.
Ew.
No, I think, it's an awesome, activity for kids to get into. It teaches them a lot of good sportsmanship and conflict resolution type skill sets for later on.
Plus, and how to duck bullets.
Plus, it's pretty good money.
Yuck.
My 14-year-old is doing it now with me in Little League, and he's great. And my 10-year-old Brenton, who's sitting right here next to me, is going to have his first game with me here either this year or in fall ball. So I think it's a good experience. I don't know about doing it as a career. I kind of agree with Reed is that college looked good to me after doing a year of umpiring like that.
I agree. That's why I went on and took the corporate job because I just didn't feel like the cutthroat you know, business that it was going to be for the next, because a lot of it was who you knew.
Cool. I remember Tom reminds me of a called strike. I used to do, you know, this big strike three call where I raise a hand and I sort of skip to my left and then pull the fist across my body for strike three. And it was a full count and the pitch comes in and I see it and I bring it and I'm going, ball. Because I called it too fast. The big thing they teach you is wait a beat before you call it. Wait it, see it, almost replay it in your head.
Right.
And I sped up, and so I'm like halfway through this big strike three call.
You're halfway up the third baseline.
Yeah, halfway up the third baseline. I go, ball. And everybody, I mean, I got away with that one because it was so clearly a ball. But yeah.
Ball, take your base.
Yeah.
John McSherry told a story when he was in the minor leagues. If a batter is not allowed to argue balls and strikes, and so it's grounds for rejection.
Okay.
And so they were in the minors, and John McSherry was working the bases, and his partner's working the plate, and this batter was arguing balls and strikes, and but not quite bad enough to throw him out, but he refused to get in the box and hit, in which case what you do is you tell the opposing pitcher, play ball. And he's supposed to throw it, and whatever he throws, you call it a strike.
Okay.
Which will motivate the guy to get back in the box. And,
okay,
he still won't get in the box. Throw again. He throws strike two. So the guy won't get in the box. So John McSherry's partner says to the pitcher, okay,
pitch.
Mm-hmm. So the pitcher throws in, and it comes in, and it isn't. It wouldn't be a strike if the batter was standing there.
Uh-huh.
But his partner doesn't have the rule right. He goes, ball one. Get in the box. And the batter won't get in the box. He goes, okay, pitch. Ball two. And McSherry is on the bases, and he knows of the rules. And he goes, oh, no, this is, no. And he's trying to come into his partner, but before he can get to his partner, he sees the manager, the pitcher's manager, charging onto the field. And McSherry tries to get between his umpiring partner and the manager. But the manager runs past McSherry and runs past McSherry's umpiring partner to the pitcher. He says, throw a strike.
Completely wrong.
Yeah.
I remember that story. Yeah, I remember that.
But didn't you have an argument? You had a set up argument one time when you were umpiring that the manager had a reservation. Didn't Mr. Taft or somebody have a reservation, and he said, you know, come around the third inning, I'm going to come out and have an argument with you, and I need you to throw me out because I have reservations? Wasn't there something?
I forgot that. Bill Taft was one of my favorite managers, kind of a mentor of mine, just said, I got to get out of here, and I also need to motivate my players, and we're down by 6 runs or 7 runs. So he came out and put in on a big show out at second base. Hands were in the air, you know, kicking dirt, but he's not saying an unkind word to me at all. And it's all set up, and, you know, after he goes through his things, I think he took his hat, threw it on the ground, and then I tossed him. And he said thank you very politely, walked off the field, left, and that was the end of it. All stage. And everybody in the stands thinks that me and him got into this huge fight. Again, with nothing even close to that.
And that flair for the dramatic took you into the legal profession.
Apparently, yes.
Well, I think some, you know, and we could go on, and I know we got to get tears. You guys got to go do a show, but we had, we had folks that were, you know, English majors that were umpires. And I think one of the best stories we heard at the school was one of the major league umpires, not sure which one it was actually an English major and was having an argument with one of the better known major league umpires at the time.
Or managers.
One of the managers at the time in the dugout.
Not
an English major. Arguing balls and strikes. Want to know, where's that pitch at? Isn't it going to set us under preposition? Not a good thing for an English major.
Right.
So went over and counseled him during a game that, you know, the proper use of the English language. You don't end a sentence under preposition. There's always a noun, something at the end of this. So the very next pitch comes in, he wants to know, where was that pitch at? He looks over at him and says, what did I just tell you? Oh, excuse me.
Where was the pitch at, asshole?
That would be the one. So we've just seen all kinds of funny different analogies in umpiring. It's always been a great experience. I sit here today 30 years later at a table full of friends, you know, as a result of that.
That's it for this week's Reduce Shakespeare Company podcast. I think all this experience about how to control the game is going to be very useful when our new sports show has latecomers. Can you say penalty box? Send us your questionable calls via email to feedback@reduceshakespeare.com. You can interact with other fans at our website, reduceshakespeare.com. Just click on forum. You can also find us at facebook.com, myspace.com/reduceshakespeare. Become a subscriber to our YouTube channel or become a twit, a reduced Twitterer. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/reduced. Thanks as always to webmaster Matt Rippey, Batboy Matthew Croak, music by John Weber and GarageBand. Our random fan shout-out this week goes to Mick Williams. No reason, it's just random. And speaking of fascinating subcultures, special thanks to Tim Young, host of the Deconstructing Comics podcast at deconstructingcomics.com. And finally, thanks very much to you for listening. I'm Austin Titchener, 136/408 of the Reduced Shakespeare Company. Podcast is a production of the Reduced Shakespeare Company, reducing expectations since 1981. Go to reduceshakespeare.com for performance dates, actor bios, email newsletters, and so much less.